Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is Shelley Kay. Shelley is the president of REOMAC. She's been associated with them for around 8 years. She also has a position with InSource Financial Services, where she handles bulk sale purchases. Shelley, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I'm delighted to be here.
Shelley, you've been involved with REOMAC since 2001. I guess we should figure out, what does REOMAC stand for?
Well, REOMAC stands for Real Estate Owned Managers Association. It was founded in 1985 by a group of REO asset managers. When the California real estate market began a downward turn, these managers met to exchange best practices. In time, they invited their service providers to participate, and REOMAC was born. When it first started, it was a California organization, and so it was known as the real estate, as REOMAC. The Real Estate Owned Managers Association of California. Now we're a national organization, so we eliminated the word California, but because of our branding, we did not change the name of the organization.
So who's eligible for membership? Sounds like more than realtors.
Oh, absolutely. The original concept was really just asset managers, and now our membership is made up of anyone whose career interest includes pre- and post-foreclosure loss prevention caused by distressed assets. At the present time, we have four categories of membership. We have our regular members, which are the asset managers and includes an employee of a financial institution, a mortgage company, or mortgage insurance company. And then we have our affiliate members, which are individuals who are actively involved in fields which complement and provide services to the workout, loss mitigation, collection, bankruptcy, foreclosure, REO asset management, such as attorneys, title companies, escrow companies, auctioneers, pest control companies, anybody that would be a complement to either the agent or the asset manager, basically. Then we have our outsource members, and they're an employee of an outsource company whose primary business responsibility is the asset management of loans secured by real property or marketing of real estate-owned properties. As you know, the market has changed a lot, and because of the influx of properties, the lenders are using outsourcers to market and sell their properties. And mm-hmm. So those outsourcers usually do what most of the asset managers and lenders do. And then, of course, we have our agent broker members, and that's an individual who's employed as a real estate agent, broker, or a real estate salesperson.
Does membership generally grow enormously during times like this?
Absolutely. Our membership has grown substantially. We're there for education and networking. And we're really glad that people come to us as new agents and new asset managers enter the business. They really do need to learn what the business is all about, and networking with your peers is such an important part of that. So we have people, yes, wanting to be educated and wanting to be in this business, and so our membership has just every day keeps growing and growing. Right now we've stopped accepting new members as we're trying to reformat the organization to ensure that those people that want to join can get into the organization.
Another moratorium, huh?
Yeah, another moratorium, I'm afraid. Our bylaws state that we have to be a balanced organization, and therefore we have probably more agents that want to get in than other categories. And because it's important to be balanced out, we are working on our bylaws to ensure that we stay balanced.
We must be doing something right if there's that many people that want to get in, so that's great.
Well, they recognize the importance of what we offer.
What is the cost of it in an annual basis?
You know, it varies by category.
Okay.
Because the lenders are really the basis of the organization. Our lenders pay $75 membership for the year. Our outsourced members, 150, and our affiliate and broker members are 375 for the year.
And there's educational events that you physically go to, as well as some online opportunities?
Absolutely. We hold meetings. We hold about 10 or 12 meetings a year all over the country. We also have two conferences. We just held our conference in Rancho Mirage, which we had over 2,500 people that attended. It was a great turnout, great education. We just had an extraordinary conference, and everybody was very excited about the level of education. Our next conference is coming up in October, and that will be in Hollywood, Florida.
Do you also have members that deal with commercial real estate lender-owned properties?
We've just, this year, I implemented a commercial committee because we knew that as the market was turning, that would be another phase of default. And so we've started a commercial committee, and we'll be branching out into the commercial end of the business. At our last conference, we did have a session on commercial and what it took to do that kind of business. And our room was overflowing with people wanting to be educated about the commercial end of the real estate business.
I absolutely feel that that's definitely the next shoe to drop. So that's going to be a lot of business for the agents that's prepared for that.
They really do need to be prepared. We're finding that with the economy tanking, it's affecting every avenue and every person. And so much of the commercial is based on the economy and people keeping their businesses going. And so we really recognize that that is going to be, as they call it, the next tsunami to happen.
In the membership numbers, is California the number one in membership?
It is at this time, as far as the number of members. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, we started out as a California group.
Correct.
And until we went national, almost all of our membership was in California. And most of those members stayed with us, so they are a large portion of our membership. But we are growing all over the country. We really are a national organization.
When you joined REMAC in 2001, there couldn't have been that much going on with lender-owned properties.
No, there wasn't. It was almost the start of the subprime, and loans were starting to be, were kind of going crazy. People were really recognizing the fact that they could go in and buy a home. And I know when I first started, I started working at Option One, and I started it in 19. I was there for 7 years. So I guess I started around 2001, mm-hmm. and we had about 300 REOs in all of the company.
The whole country then?
Through the country, and mostly because it was a California. Again, it was mostly California because the company started in California, and then they mm-hmm. started branching off nationally. So it was mostly California, and we had about 300 files. When I left last year, we had closer to 20,000 files.
A slight growth pattern.
Just a little bit.
2008, let's say, compared to 2007 as far as volume for the agents involved in the REO world. Any comparison? 2008 looks to be like an all-time record.
Absolutely. The floodgates just opened. It was the most amazing thing we've ever seen. The bubble bursting, and lenders and services were just overwhelmed by the amount of defaults in their portfolios. The inventory grew. Nobody ever experienced anything like this before. If we sold 100 properties in the office, then 200 more were coming in a couple of days. I mean, it was just a constant battle. We could never keep up.
Have agents that have been through this before a number of cycles expressed to you that there was a difference in how they were handled this time?
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been such a bombardment of properties all at one time.
And the lenders before, it seemed like the asset manager would talk to the REO agent, and there was some type of communication almost on a regular basis, where I get the sense that now it's an email and sometimes almost a block wall in between communication. And that's frustrating for the agent.
Yes and no. The agent, too, is busy and out in the field, and everybody, you know, we have our Blackberries, or as they call them, our Crackberries.
Uh-huh.
That we're always in touch, but most of the lenders went to online systems.
Correct.
And so everything was placed, you could do all your business online. So you almost didn't need to talk to the agent on a daily basis. The only thing you would talk to the agent about would be exceptions or if there were any issues or problems. Because if you had a really competent agent and things were going smoothly, you almost did not need to speak to them.
I think one of the problems, at least, you know, as a company, we buy REOs and we deal with the REO agents. And in the beginning, in 2008 especially, there was a little bit of a challenge getting the prices that to be accurate enough to sell the property. So there were a lot of losses the lenders took, I think, that weren't necessary had they had the infrastructure to listen to the local agent.
Well, it's not necessarily the agents that we had to listen to. When you work for a large company, it depends on what their infrastructure is.
Okay.
When you're working for a lender, a lot of times they are appraisal driven. And as the market is rising and it's not falling as quickly or the numbers weren't there, the appraisers were going in and they were appraising the properties. And I know that I had to put a property on the market at the higher of the two values.
Correct.
The DPO or the appraisal. We were always going with the higher values so as not to leave anything on the table. I think our agents were out in the field. They saw what was happening, where the appraisers were just giving us the statistics and may not have noticed that the values were dropping as rapidly as they were. Nobody could keep up with what was happening.
Correct.
So every time you got a new BPO, you would lower the values, but we were chasing the market.
But it was hard to get somebody to really listen to that broker price opinion number as accurate, because the appraiser would be dealing with the past and comps.
Right.
And the REO agent's looking at the street going, this isn't going to sell.
Well, that was the dilemma. And so, you know, you have a good asset manager that can do battle with senior management and say, hey, look, you know, I've talked to the agent. This is the statistics. We need to be proactive in pricing. And, you know, I think it took a while.
There you go, yeah.
For everybody to really grasp what was happening in the marketplace. You had so many years of run-up prices that it was hard to fathom that they were dropping as quickly as they were.
And they never had before either. So it was
not like that.
No, it's very easy to understand somebody's problem with a 3 or 4% per month decline.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the years ago, I remember when there was a decline, the appraisers would give us an appraisal and say, I'm deducting 4% or 3% per month or whatever it was to accommodate for what's happened in the marketplace. We weren't finding that on these appraisals because I don't think anybody really knew what was happening. They didn't have the statistics. They were happening too fast.
Yes, if they were looking at comps, that wasn't going to work. I mean, if they were 90 days old even, that was a light year away of what the broker was going to get for the next property.
Precisely. At a certain point, I think we all had to look at what was listed to even get a feel for the marketplace rather than what sold. And your appraisers are really giving you information from data, not necessarily what's really happening in the marketplace. We hope that our agents are so familiar with their territory that they know everything that's going on in and around the small area that they're specializing in. And they should really have a pulse on what's happening. And I think the lenders started to realize that the agents really were their best source of information.
Has it been hard to keep up with all of the rule changes regarding the foreclosure process in the last year?
It's been incredible. Every time we turn around, there's something new happening. You know, you go into sell a property, and in the middle of everything, there's a new change. The lenders are scared. The attorneys are trying to keep up with what's going on. It's been quite challenging for everybody.
Now, you have California has thrown a couple of changes just as a state, but you also have national level changes that take place. And so it really is a challenge to try and keep up with all this stuff. Would you say a lot of states are having moratoriums, or is that a very small minority?
It's not really the states themselves that are having moratoriums. I know California did for a while, but it's really the lenders and the GSEs that have really put the moratoriums in place. And so as some of the larger lenders go, so do the smaller lenders.
So when Fannie and Freddie decided to have a moratorium, everyone kind of followed suit for a while?
That's pretty much when Fannie and Freddie did that. That's pretty much what happened, where all of the lenders went along with it and said, well, if Fannie and Freddie are doing it, then I guess we better do it. And so they put the moratoriums in place. It's been very, very challenging.
Now, that came off April 1st for them. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, do you think that there's any plans for a national moratorium?
Oh, we can only hope not. I don't think anybody really thinks that the moratorium is doing anything other than stalling the inevitable.
I would think as an REO agent, because I know some of the ones in Riverside County, if they're among the largest ones, have sometimes 700-800 listings. You have to staff up for that. When somebody artificially pulls the plug and creates a moratorium for 9 months, that messes with your business model.
Well, it's not only that, but it's messing with the lender's business model also. The lenders have had to gear up. That's why we have outsourcers, because the lenders couldn't keep up with the flow of the business. So you have your outsourcers gearing up. Everybody's gearing up. So the moratoriums, while they may keep people in their homes temporarily, they may be putting other people out of work that will then start that trickle effect of losing their homes.
There's a learning curve to the whole process, too. So you can't just go get another person to fill that gap. If it 90 days later you start all over again, that's a problem.
Well, that's exactly what's happening. Most of the lenders, the outsourcers, they're hanging on to their people, hoping that they can find enough work for them in the interim, knowing that with the moratoriums lifted, the properties are going to start flowing again.
Mm-hmm. Now, they just came up with a new rule protecting tenants after the foreclosure sale, and this allows somebody that has a lease agreement to stay in the property for the entire time of the lease. Well, I'm just curious, did you know about that, and what's your...
Yes. In fact, we had a committee meeting. Our legislative committee did a conference call a couple of days ago to talk about trying to understand the legislation and figuring out how we are going to word it so that we can get the information out to all of our members.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a couple of attorneys, and the new statute, it's not been tested and interpreted by the courts. Its wording is open to interpretation. The attorneys are telling me it's vague and unclear. I have an attorney I work with in New York, Lance Margolin. He had sent out a paperwork and an email to all of his clients advising them of this new law and trying to interpret it for them. And REOMAC also is working diligently with a number of attorneys all over the country to get their feedback and information as to how they feel about the new law and what the clients need to do to comply with this. The problem is this will turn lenders into landlords.
That's
which
right.
Is
it's
not
terrible.
The intent of any mortgage or loan process.
No, I mean that's you almost go, okay, who's in charge of this thing? Because that's very expensive for the lender that exists, but also a lender going next is going to go, wow, they can change the rules after the fact. And that, I would say that would put some fear into the next lender.
Well, that's exactly what Lance and I were discussing. He said most state laws now specifically state that lenders who take back property in a foreclosure are not landlords. So you're talking about changing contract law. There's also the concern that will scare away potential investors from buying the properties at the foreclosure sale.
Of course. I'm one of them. Yeah. I can guarantee you that's done that. We will not buy a property with a tenant in the property, period.
Absolutely. And what I keep asking the question is, who's going to be collecting the rents? Who is set up to do this? Are the agents collecting the rents?
Of course.
Why would they do that if they're not going to be able to sell the property? Or if they do sell the property, it has to be sold with the tenants in it. How many single-family residences are going to be selling with tenants in them?
Well, you will have investors be the only game there, that's for sure.
Well, and then again, the investors are shying away because they're going to have to be landlords.
So. Well, a lot of us want to be. So that's, I hadn't really thought that one out. Maybe that's the ultimate solution is make the number work, and we may be able to work that out. But at the trustee sale, we wouldn't take that risk on. We might, after the fact, as an REO, where we understand the parameters of the lease, because when we go to a trustee sale, there's a good chance we've never seen the inside of the house or met who is physically in the house.
Exactly. And you also don't know whether the rent is market rent.
That's right. Or if it's a 3-year lease.
That's right. And that, again, is the issue. And, in fact, Lance was, we were talking about this, and he was saying, what is a valid lease? How do you determine whether this is really something that you want to keep? It's just,
you can see a cottage,
nightmare.
You can see a cottage
in lenders.
Yeah, I was just thinking you could see cottage industry spreading out, going, okay, how do we hoodwink somebody thinking that we're the tenant or we have the right to do the lease? I mean, there are people out there that will figure something out. And I just think it's very expensive for the lenders to have to go through this. They're going to have enough losses in California. They don't need any more help.
Well, that's it. The longer they hold on to those properties, the more expensive it is, the less they're making on, not even making, the less they're recovering on them. And it's just, you've got taxes, you've got insurances, you have the water, you're now a landlord, so you're responsible for everything. No lender is set up for this.
Well, let's talk about, and we only have about a minute and a half left on this segment. The cities in California, they passed 1137, and that was giving the right for the cities to fine the lenders $1,000 a day for things like brown lawns and green pools and so forth. And we know cities that have actually hired code enforcement people on commission, and that's all they do.
Yeah, that's not only in California. That's in a lot of places, especially Chicago and some of the other cities. And I think it's creating havoc for the lender. There are a lot of times when the lender does not even have the property back vacant where they can go in and do any work on the property.
Absolutely.
And so they're getting fined. Instead of being able to put that money into repairing the property, they're paying fines. They're just putting the lender in a position where they're spending more and more money. They really need to be working together with the lenders, and they need to almost be in partnership with the owner of that property. What's so interesting is they're waiting for the properties to go to foreclosure, then they're doing the fining. They're not doing the fining with the occupant or the owner, the homeowner.
No, there's a lot of sympathy for that person and very little for the lender. Shelley, what is the website for REOMAC?
www.reomac.com.
All right, Shelley, I've enjoyed this first segment, and you'll be with us with one more segment. Shelley Kay, president of REOMAC.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.